There's something I need to tell you, Chris. The thing that you do, like when you move your lips and you vibrate your vocal cords, that's not singing, technically.
Yeah, technically. If you want to be technical, no. But I think Justin will agree it was magical. The rhythm of the sound and vision to the pattern of his brain waves. I think it can make for a much deeper response. So.
I don't think the fact that he's silent is a sign of a technical problem. I think it's because he's dead.
Because I knocked him on his ass.
Like you actually killed him. That's how bad it was.
Live from a mysterious oil tanker hidden somewhere in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Starring Chris Grant, Movie Kitsman, and Justin McElroy. This is Joystick Podcast, episode 51. And now, without further ado, here is Chris Grant.
Welcome to Joystick Podcast for Friday, May 30th. I'm your host, Chris Grant.
This is Ludwig Kitsman.
Bottom of the ocean. I'm Justin McElroy.
Justin's calling us from his Fisher Price My First Cell Phone, and he sounds a little bad as a result.
I don't have my professional quality.
I don't think anyone believed the bit about him being at the bottom of the ocean, because I think we all know that Justin floats.
You know why? You know why, Ludwig? Because hope floats.
Why, Chris? Tell me.
Hope floats, exactly.
I just imagine one of those Barack Obama posters, you know, with Justin's face on it instead, with hope underneath. You know what that means, Photoshoppers. Oh. Get to it.
yeah, how about it?
So, the reason Justin sounds so terrible is because he's actually not at home at his posh apartment. He's slumming it in Las Vegas at
because he lost everything on the craps table. He has no home anymore.
Have you actually blown any money?
No.
Yeah,
I put like. Here's exactly what happened. I got out like $20 out of the machine. I was like, I'm just gonna gamble this money. I don't freaking care. And so I put like $5 into one of the slot machines because I didn't want to go to a table and put down like $20 and be like, hi roller, let's do this. So I put $5 into a machine, and I lost that $5 in, like, 3 minutes. And I was like, that was not a satisfying way to spend my money. And then, like, I look, and across the room I see the bar. And I'm like, wait a minute. I have $15. Why don't I just go put it towards something that's guaranteed to bring me pleasure?
I'm with you.
Start drinking. Like, yeah. I know I enjoy that. It's guaranteed. I wouldn't throw $20 away any other time. And honestly, pulling a handle is not that satisfying. I'm sure it would be fun if you win, but you don't. Spoiler alert.
I've been to Vegas, it feels like a dozen times in the last 3 years, 4 years. My girlfriend and I went there on vacation once, like, just driving through. We did a Southwest Road Tour. But anyway, there's CES there every year. There's different events. And every single time, I think I've spent in total maybe $20. I don't get it. I don't get the gambling thing.
Yeah, it's just not. I mean, if you're like someone who's susceptible to that sort of thing, like, I'll play poker with friends. I enjoy that because it's like an enjoyable thing to do, but I just don't find that, you know, I don't find the whole thing that pleasurable.
It's weird playing it at a table with a bunch of swarthy dudes, you know, you're like,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know, you're swarthy. I'm not playing with you.
You're swarthy. You're gonna take my money.
You're really good at this, aren't you? So, but beyond that, you're at Capcom. You can't really talk about much of anything.
Yeah, next week I'll be able to talk a lot about a lot of games, and I'm working on some posts. Come back to the site starting at, like, 8 on Tuesday. There's going to be a torrential downpour of hands-on. I can say what I can do hands-on of.
I don't know.
Right?
Sometimes they're weird about that. There's one guy listening at 8:30
right now. You can imagine what games I've been playing. In your head, you can probably do a little search and figure it out. It's what you think.
Yeah. It's Google it, people. Come on.
Yeah.
So that's Capcom. It's in Las Vegas. Awesome, I guess. How about what we've been playing this week? Justin's been playing, I don't know, maybe DS or PSP games since you were traveling, perhaps.
Yeah, I didn't. I haven't played much of anything, really. I mean, most of the week has been, you know, researching for this and prepping and packing and crap. On the plane, I played some more The World Ends With You, and it continues to get better and better. I hear it's, like, hard to find now, so act fast or try to find a copy, because it's, right now, it's my handheld game of the year. I like it better than God of War PSP easily. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful game that everyone should play and enjoy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's excellent.
I mean, Mighty praise.
It was off-putting at first, just because I wasn't crazy about the main character or the aesthetic, but the longer I play it, and the more the I play the story. It's so well written, and the combat's so fun, and you're always leveling things up, and it's just excellent. It's really, really good.
It's pretty amazing that you said well written, considering the other Square Enix portable game that I'm playing is Crisis Core, which I would not call well written at all.
Yeah.
It's pretty horribly written.
I don't know. Whoever they had localizing it was hit it on the nose. I mean, it's very applicable to our generation. Like, it's not, like, in Crisis Core, I think a lot of the themes are, you know, duty and battle and, you know, honor and things like that. And I don't think it's themes that a lot of people who play video games can connect to, really.
Yeah, we're downright dishonorable.
Yeah, we're unscrupulous, but I think that The World Ends With You as much is very applicable to our sort of generation of people.
If people remember, obviously one of the prizes in our Now You're a Songwriter contest is going to be a copy of that. Your choice between that and what was it? That and Layton, I think. So we're actually gonna skip going over some of the entries this week in that, just get this out of the way up front, and we're instead going to have a whole special episode dedicated to judging all the entries. There were so many good ones that, you know, we want to be able to give them a lot more time. And that way, if you don't like that sort of thing, you can skip it entirely. Whatever. We don't care.
We might want to do it. We might do it. Week would be good. Instead of doing a regular show, because I'm going to have to talk about all that Capcom stuff.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just do a bunch of special episodes.
You know? A bunch of special episodes. You guys would love that, wouldn't you?
Now that we're on episode 51, it feels like we could maybe slow it down a lot and do a regular episode every month. What do you think?
I want the numbered episodes to be special, like Street Fighter. I want it to be like, this is something huge. We're completely overhauling, so we're giving it a number.
That's right. And then in between each episode, we'll have like four sub-episodes, you know, where it's like something edition, like versus edition, Marvel characters or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or Capcom characters, perhaps, in the case of next week's show. So that's what you've been playing. Ludwig, have you played anything amazing?
Has your life been changed? I only really played one game, and that was Knight's Journey of Dreams on the Wii.
Which you said wasn't as bad as you thought it would be.
No, I was actually quite surprised. I was expecting a complete and utter disaster on par with Sega's other games. And it turns out that it's actually not bad.
You played it in Tokyo, right? And you were not impressed.
Well, no, because then it had terrible slowdown, and the people, Sega's PR people, were desperately trying to convince me that even though it has the same characters and takes place in the same universe, it's not a sequel. It's a new game.
I love when their marketing is so broken.
But anyway, so I'm not sure I would recommend the game if you don't have that foundation of nostalgia that the game can tap into. Because some of the platforming segments are really very terrible. But if you appreciate things like the game's soundtrack and the characters and stuff like that, I think it's definitely worth visiting. The Knights levels are really, really good. Things that the game, where it takes some wrong steps are in terms of the story, because there are lots of cutscenes and knights can talk, and they essentially try to explain everything that the first game, which had absolutely no dialogue, didn't need to explain or didn't want to explain. They basically try and, push it into this, you know, pigeonhole it into a story, and this is why you're having this dream. This is why the level looks like this, and it's just, it's pointless, and it just makes, you know, makes the whole experience a little bit more.
It's like when they tried to make a Mario movie and actually wrap a story around the nonsensical.
Do you remember when they made the Pink Panther cartoon where he could talk?
No, I don't. That sounds horrifying.
Exactly. So this is like the same kind of effect. Like, they're trying to explain things that really don't need to be explained. It, like, it works on its own. It's kids, you know, having the – they have certain fears in their everyday life, and they have a dream, and Knights helps them out, that kind of thing. You don't need excessive dialogue to explain the origins of the dream world and all that crap. Seriously. And Knights sounds like a dainty British butler / nanny. It's impossible to tell if it's a he or she. It's bizarre.
Like a certain South African blogger I know.
Yeah. My favorite moment in that game is when you have this owl who basically is the all he does is deliver exposition. That's basically his role in the game. He doesn't do anything else. And
expository owl.
You're this kid and you've just arrived in the dream world, and he's like, okay, you need to go over there and touch Knights if you're into that sort of thing.
Creepy expository owl.
Awkward.
Yeah.
See, that's why you don't want to like add plot and like detail to the story, because yes, kids are touching Knights. It's weird. So they can fly.
I'm still taking any recommendation of Sega games from Ludwig with a huge grain of salt, on account of his predisposed.
I hate modern Sega games. What are you talking about?
You, as much as you hate them, you still said that you that you sort of liked the Sonic game. There's some part of you inside that wouldn't let you not like it.
I liked certain parts of it, yes. I liked the levels. And I liked the soundtrack. I hated the loading and all the other crap that went with it.
I liked the box art.
Why is there no middle ground with you, Chris?
Come on, because that game was... Okay, anyway. I'm not even gonna discuss it with you.
Knights isn't that bad. If you like the original... Or if you love the original like me, you should definitely give it a shot.
We also played some Halo. That was something you played.
Yes.
A little bit. I was doing really well for a while. It's not true. Mm-hmm. I played Penny Arcade Adventures, which I really, really enjoyed. I thought it was great. I thought it was exactly like a lot of these other kind of independent adventure games that have been popping up. Something like Telltale doing making and publishing Cinemax, or... You know, this was made by Hothead, or I was just doing an interview the other day, but it's similar. You have the guys doing Hail to the Chimp, which is another independently produced and published game that, you know, is very focused on comedy. And I think it's bizarre that every game that's trying to be funny is independent. You know, maybe with the lone exception of, even though they're still independent, Tim Schafer, Brutal Legend. And even now, we're hearing rumors that it might not be a sure thing. Like, Sierra might not publish it, depending on where it falls in the Activision merger. So even that's not a sure thing. It seems like Tim Schafer, comedy, funny game, Jack Black in it, like, that should be a definite. But either way, as upsetting as that is...
The small issue of the sales figures for Psychonauts.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, why aren't these games selling? And... You know, it was nice to see the Penny Arcade game. You know, Sam & Max, by most accounts, is a success, right? Even though it's in a total niche on the side. And its distribution model supports that niche, right? Distribute it episodically, distribute it yourself, distribute it on GameTap. So the Penny Arcade game going on Xbox Live Arcade and three major platforms, which is a really impressive feat. Nice work, guys. But on Xbox Live Arcade, it was the number three opening game. We'll talk about the other two when we get to the news, but... That's a pretty impressive launch, and I think it's because they kind of, you know, just went right for a niche, and they knew that their audience was on Xbox Live Arcade, and Xbox Live Arcade supported a small game, and, you know, not to mention an independent game. So, really neat. But I thought the game was great. I thought it was really funny. I thought the action was really good. It's actually a lot harder than I thought it would be. There's an achievement for beating the game without ever dying, which seems to me like it'd be impossible. Like, it's really easy to die on a simple character. There's an achievement for beating the end guy without using any healing items, which I think would be really hard because he's not very easy. But I thought that was great. I encourage you to play it as soon as you can, Ludwig. I think you're going to love it.
Well, I will as soon as If the overlords at Microsoft allow me to download it.
Yeah, apparently there's some snafu where the region locking is enabled on that game. It's only supposed to be region locked for South Korea. Robert Koo at Penny Arcade told me because of the violence, I guess, their ESRB.
Well, people mistake South Korea for South Africa all the time.
Yeah, so somebody hit the South button and they're like, oh, oops.
Southern Hemisphere blocked.
Turns out South Carolinians can't download it either. It's really weird. So I played that. I thought that was great. I encourage everybody to play it. It's $20. I thought that maybe that was a little high before, but I think the quality of the game and the length, it's pretty long. Maybe it took me 8 hours to beat. It's definitely worth it. I also started playing, after I read some of the early reviews for Metal Gear Solid 4,
And because I was constantly talking about it.
Yeah, and because you wouldn't shut up about it. But I got totally nerded out, basically a nerd epileptic fit, and I fired up Metal Gear Solid 3. I played for about an hour, and by played for an hour, it means I watched the first hour of cutscenes and codec dialogue, and I retrieved my knapsack from the tree. That's all. And I saved it. So I got to obviously put some more time in there, but...
I love the intro in that game, though, diving out of the plane. Yeah. It's really awesome.
It looks pretty crap on even my 24-inch HD set. Even with
really?
The
did you play on your PS3?
Yeah, upscaling. It still looks blurry. I
thought it looked really good on mine.
Well, yours is probably better than mine. Aren't you impressive?
Obviously.
did we all just really do that?
It is preserved for everyone to enjoy.
I'm going to edit that out. I'm actually editing this week, folks. So.
Oh God.
Yeah, it'll be bad. I don't have any of Justin's little sound bits, so I have to go pull them out of older episodes. So ghetto.
Well, after the wonderful 50th episode, this is going to be a catastrophe.
We're getting back to normal. What we're doing is lowering their expectations way down. And then
for episode 100.
And then we can build them back up. So maybe by the time we're at 100, it'll be roughly on par with 50, maybe. So, news. Let's do it.
Woo!
Yeah! All right, I'll take the first story. I just put these... there's three stories here together. These are all like new game announcement sort of things. First new game announcement, Tecmo Bowl. Obviously, they announced it for DS. It's coming to Wii also in 2009.
that is a football game, is it not?
Yeah, American-style football. Following the NES classic, evidently the DS game, which our new writer, Randy Nelson, hi Randy, got some hands-on time. He said it played very similarly to the old version, surprisingly. It has a very robust character creation system, so you're totally not supposed to use that to recreate NFL teams, wink, wink. You can also just set all your dudes to like 90% of all their stats and then play online with it. So it doesn't seem like it has a very well-balanced multiplayer. But, yeah, they announced a Wii version. Hey, if you like it, awesome for you. Good luck. Have fun.
What other Wii games did they announce?
Other new Wii games are SimCity Creator coming to Wii and DS. You did this post, right, Ludwig? Yeah.
Yeah.
I
just picked it because I really wanted to write that headline.
Urban Erection. Nice. Nice job. SimCity on the DS sounds... I didn't pick up the last one that came out, even though it was supposed to be pretty good, but... I'm still like... I think
that
back of like...
Not so good.
Was that really? I heard it was good. I don't know. I think one of my fondest game memories like ever was playing SimCity for Super Nintendo, which I must have spent... 100 bajillion hours on? How many years is that? It's a couple years, I think.
When I play SimCity, I tend to be pretty self-defeating. I enjoy building an impressive metropolis and then having it destroyed.
Yeah, that's what you do. You build it up and then you're like, tornado! Ha ha! Sucker.
So like the draw of the one on the Wii and the DS is you get to draw your rivers and your roads with your hand, which is amazing.
Whoa!
Take populous. I prefer to wait until one of my brothers had built a metropolis and then, put Godzilla in it and insist that...
And then save.
Things are. It's a natural disaster. You don't see it coming.
It's force majeure. It's nothing you can do. So they announced that. That's coming out when? Whoa, it's actually coming out in 2008? Oh, wow. Impressive. It'll be out in September, just a couple months. How do they do that? How do they make a game and sneak it on us? Like, bam, there's your game. It's like ninja game development. The next one isn't really a new game, but it was just another confirmation that from Ubisoft's UbiDays, which we'll talk about in a little bit, that the Avatar game, tying in with the new James Cameron movie, is in fact 3D. Now, every time somebody reads this, they go, 3D, oh my god, welcome to 1995. But what they really mean is 3-D, you know, glasses and stuff jumping out at you, like Freddy Krueger's hand coming out, you know, or a shark.
Yeah.
And it's almost surprising that we haven't had more 3D games, you know?
But yeah, maybe because it's annoying.
Yeah, maybe because the technology doesn't really work. Maybe that's why.
No, not on the home. But, I mean, it's getting better. I saw the Miley Cyrus Best of Both Worlds, and that was really impressive. You could feel it just coming right through the screen, her energy and her whimsy.
You are creeping me out in a bad way.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's just leave it at that and keep going.
Fair enough.
Well, yeah. let me see. I threw this in here just, you know, to mention it, just for fun. That GameTap is shutting down its entire read and watch sections.
That is fun. Yeah. What the hell, Chris?
You know, sorry. For fun.
People lost their jobs, lols.
It's actually really sad. A former joystick writer worked there, and they literally got like an hour notice. It was like, oh, by the way, we're shutting down these divisions, so see ya. Come back tomorrow and drop off your keys. Bye.
I nothing to do with those people, like, nothing personally against them, but I never felt like they did. I mean, I know they had a veteran staff and everything, but I never felt like they did anything to sort of develop a culture of reading that. You know what I mean? Like, they put all the money into resources, but then they didn't, like when we were, like when that Game Almighty site started, a year ago, you know, we were getting email blasts every day that was like, you know, check this out, we've got this, or check this out, we've got that, and I don't feel like we were getting that sort of level of stuff from GameTap, and, you know, it was kind of annoying when Game Almighty did it, but at least it put them on the radar, you know?
I mean, it's not that we didn't crawl. I mean, we were reading GameTap and looking for stuff, but for the most part, it was a lot of the stuff that all the other big sites have. And, true. We were, but not other people.
We were, but...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, in talking to people that have worked there, it seemed like their focus was kind of messed up. And even when you think of the idea of what GameTap is, right? Like, if they're going to be writing about games from an independent editorial perspective, and GameTap is also a game provider, then, like, there's a conflict of interest there in a way, right? Like, they could preview, I'm looking at the picture we had for our post, they could preview Grid. But what if in 3 years, let's say they give Grid a terrible review when it comes out, and in 3 years they want to put Grid on the service. Like, is that review going to be right underneath the game when you know, how does that work?
Well, they were also, I mean, they were doing their games that were coming out day and date with.
Yeah.
I mean, like Jericho, for instance. I don't think the read and watch section was working.
Oh, good
that point.
But and it's funny, I picked Grid, though, because Codemasters, they have the deal with Codemasters to release stuff day and date.
Right,
so
it may be on there.
But yeah, so, I mean, how does that affect... It's, I don't know. I think that might have been part of the issue, but the watch section was also tricky. You know, that was part of their client, where you log on and they have, like, cartoons and stuff you can watch. And I don't know. It made sense. I thought they would be outsourcing a lot more of that to Cartoon Network, which, you know, is their Turner corporate sibling. I mean, technically, I guess GameTap is our corporate sibling. We're both owned by Time Warner, AOL, giant monster
what?
Company. But what?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. But don't shut us down, please. So, GameTap, RIP. I still like your service. I like your Mac client, too. Thanks. Bye. So, here, we got...
That was very sincere.
Oh, I'm being sincere.
Yeah.
I like GameTap. It's sad to see him go. You know, at least, you know, no. my one hope would be that this is what they need to do to make sure that the actual game service stays and exists and, you know, has the money and resources it needs, then, you know, I'm better off with that. That's a great service. So, Capcom post. Justin, you want to hit them? These are the only two Capcom stories that we can kind of talk about this week.
Hold on, I just had to wait.
You do have a computer with you, don't you?
Yeah, it is. Let's see here. I was actually scrolling down to look at the emails, which I noticed. Capcom confirms Street Fighter IV coming to PC 360 and PS3.
Shocking news.
Yeah, shocking news. PC is a little bit surprising, but I mean...
Did you see the game was running on a PC? Anyway. Like, there was a mouse coming out of the arcade cabinet.
And Capcom's been putting a lot of their stuff on PC lately, too. You know, Lost Planet.
Yeah.
The console stuff, not a really big surprise. I didn't think it was just going to be an arcade game. But
I thought there would be a Wii version, though.
Yeah. Too bad. I was actually, you know, I talked about Justin to Justin about this yesterday, but you know, it's hard to get a sense of where they're positioning the game when you have the arcade game coming out and this game coming out, and you have Street Fighter HD Remix Deluxe Mega Supreme coming out. And the question is, the audience for those two overlaps a lot. Like, I know personally, I'm not spending $60 on Street Fighter 4 when Street Fighter HD is way more up my alley, and it's going to be probably $20. And you know, it seems strange, but I think their biggest market's probably going to be arcade for this, just not in America. But hey, coming to all three platforms. And the other big news is
Rearmed, Bionic Commando Rearmed is not going to make its May date, which you probably already figured out. And
since it's May 30th.
You know, the May date was never something that, I at least as far as I know, you know, it was something they set as a target, but they didn't say, like, mark it on your calendars, it's coming in May.
I don't think they had an official press release saying May. You know,
right. But. And I get the sense that, actually, I remember that story originated during GDC, so it could easily be one of those things where somebody was talking to somebody and they said, you know, when do you want to get it done? And, oh, May, you know. But,
you can't really talk about it, but let's say if you played it and it's fun, blink once. If you played it and it's not fun, blink twice. All right, I see. I actually don't see. We're all on audio here, but I'm sure that maybe whatever you blinked was exciting.
Nothing that I've learned here, like nothing that like they've officially told us or anything, but I get the sense that it's done, and it's a scheduling thing.
Well, there's the certification thing, and then there's, of course, Microsoft scheduling, and then on top of that, there's Capcom scheduling, where they have to fit it in with their release calendars and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's kind of a big deal. When you talk to these companies about getting stuff put on Live Arcade or getting put on PSN, and this is coming to PSN also, so there's Sony and Microsoft, and getting them both to get things certified and get them released, it's like trying to herd cats. Lots of stuff going on everywhere. So speaking of Xbox Live Arcade, I'm sure Capcom hopes Bionic Commando is going to make it to this list, but...
This is a really good story. I like it a lot.
Yeah,
makes me feel warm inside.
I know. It really is a great, great story, and it makes me feel like really proud of the platform and the work that Microsoft has done on it. Gabe from Penny Arcade revealed the top four best launches ever for Xbox Live Arcade. And they are, Ludwig, since it makes you feel so proud. Each time he says this, he's going to glow.
Oh, if only you could see me now. Well, turns out the game with the best launch on Xbox Live Arcade is Rez.
Which is pretty incredible.
Isn't that great? Like, this is like the one of the Dreamcast classics that didn't really find an audience the first time around, and now it's getting a second chance, and it's doing well.
No, it went to PS2 and still didn't find an audience.
Right, exactly.
And then
this is good news, right? So... And then followed below that is Ikaruga, which was in more or less the same predicament, even though it's an arcade game.
Didn't find an audience, really.
Yeah, it came to GameCube and Dreamcast. Didn't really become a huge success. I'm not sure this warrants a massive success, but it is, considering it has, you know, these are the biggest launches, it's definitely, you know, people are downloading this game and buying it.
It does come to...
Third place is Penny Arcade.
Oh.
What? Eh?
on the one hand, it's encouraging, but, you know, to see games like this, you know, getting their due, as it were. But on the other hand, it's kind of indicative of who is going online to buy these games, like what sort of audience they're marketing towards. Hopefully someone, you know, the next time someone thinks about releasing Soul Trio Solitaire or something, they'll remember, like, who exactly the audience is for Xbox Live Arcade games, apparently.
Yeah, I mean,
360 really is the Dreamcast 2, is that what you're saying?
If you look at these four games, though, like, it speaks overwhelmingly to the audience being really, really savvy gamers, right? Like, this is an audience
older
that's...
games, right? N Plus is the fourth one. Penny Arcade is the third ranked game. Yeah. N Plus is a great game.
It is great.
I'm glad to see it on here.
But this is an audience of people that are, you know, reading sites like Joystick and have an actual knowledge and appreciation of older games, you know? It's pretty impressive. On the one hand, you can look at it and say it's frustrating that two already released games that have already had years to build up mindshare are number one and two, but it's not really surprising. But it's impressive to see that number three and four are original games, you know?
Plus, you have that, you know, ever since, I mean, in recent times, people are a lot more vocal on the internet about games, and you get to learn a lot more about games than you did before. And those Resin and Ikaruga are two games that I think a lot of people thought, I would definitely try that if I ever got my hands on a copy. And, you know, putting it up on Xbox Live Arcade makes it really easy to get your hands on a copy.
It's
one of those games that you file away in your mind saying, I really should, you know, try that out one day because everyone speaks so highly of it.
Yeah, I got a copy of Rez off of GooseX, and then when it came out on XBLA, I don't know if you remember, I bought it that day just to just to put my support behind it, which is funny because I actually didn't play it for like 2 weeks. But... So I was part of that, you know, this is the launch window being the first 3 days of availability. So I think, I don't know, there's a lot of people like me who just wanted to buy it just to be like, yeah, this is a good game. You should do more of this.
But yeah, apparently that whole message worked.
I know.
Apparently, you know, you sent a signal, message received.
Yeah. Hey, take that, Microsoft. So another interesting story, and we'll talk about, you know, in terms of sales and stuff, and this is the one figure we don't know, but we'll talk about the potentially delisted Xbox Live Arcade titles later. We mentioned last week that they're going to actually be pulling titles off the service based on three criteria. But that comes later in the big three.
Which is still an awful idea.
I know. It's virtual shelf real estate. Like, literally, Microsoft, you could make a corner that just says crappy games and put a million games in there. Just a billion of them.
I think the way to go is and I don't understand why this isn't happening, just slash the prices. You know, like, say...
Budget games,
yeah. Going to, you know, it's going to be $1 or $2, you know, 100 points, 150 points, whatever.
That's the thing, like, Soul Trio Solitaire, like...
making revenue.
Yeah, I mean, ask those publishers, like, would you rather have your game disappear or cut the price to nothing, and then you might get a lot of sales, you know? Like, people are going to be like, well, crap, you know, I didn't want Solitaire before, but if it's 50 cents, like, okay.
Yeah, I'll buy some shit for 50 cents.
Yeah.
I'll buy anything for 50 cents.
Literally. I'll buy a soda for $2. Like, come on, make your game $2, I'll buy it. Anyway, and now that I feel a little better about the DRM, like, I might be able to own this game on a future console, like, I feel better about buying more XBLA games. Alright, so moving on, just a couple little stories here. I'm gonna skip this one, kinda. Id Software leaves the ESA, another in a long list of people leaving the ESA. Not surprising, Id Software's independent. Their biggest publishing partner is Activision, who was the first company to leave the ESA, so... not hugely surprising there. Ubi Days 2008. There was a couple stories out of here. Notably, Ludwig, you're going to want to take the big story.
The big story is obviously Beyond Good and Evil 2 being announced.
Woo!
I had to pinch myself.
This is something that I think everybody in the world knew was coming. I was actually just talking with Libby at when we were out in San Francisco. Libby from Game Daily, and she said something like, you really think so? And I was like, okay, Michel Ancel hasn't done anything in a while. Like, the Rabbids games are just being, like, made without him, I think. They just kind of keep going.
I mean, that's what's so funny about it. It's like, I think they were like, okay, Miguel, you can make your crazy Beyond Good and Evil 2 game, whatever, if you make us a really popular franchise with bunnies in it. And he's like, okay. And that's him paying his dues. Like, they should let him do whatever he wants to do now. Because he's done his bit.
Here's your bunny game, damn it.
Except can I just, my true masterpiece?
So, so they announced Beyond Good and Evil 2. They released some screenshots and a pretty trailer. It is really pretty.
Looks fantastic.
They later,
and it's so strange to think, because this is when you finish that game and you realize that it sold 5 copies worldwide. You kind of close the door on a potential sequel forever. You just give up on it. This is like Shenmue 3. And hey, it's coming.
Right.
We're getting sequel. It's amazing.
This is like Rez going on Live Arcade and being the number one game.
Damn it, you people better buy it this time, or I will come into your homes and personally murder you.
I still haven't played the first one. Take that.
Oh, you are dead.
I have it for Xbox. It won't work on my damn 360, and I'm not hooking up the Xbox again. So I've since then put it in my queue at GooseX for GameCube, I think. But I don't know. Like, there's no GameCube copies in existence, apparently. It's been sitting there. I'll get it
really
soon.
I don't really understand the whole thing. Yeah. I don't get it. I think whoever's running the money over there at Ubisoft is off their rocker. Unless, the only rational explanation I could think is that, like, they really did tell and tell, like, you have to make enough money. If you want to do this game, you have to make enough money with Rayman Raving Rabbids.
Oh, that's exactly what I think. I think that's exactly what happened. And I think they can make this sell really well. I mean, the first game was murdered because it was released in one of the busiest holiday seasons ever in 2004. So it competed against games like Halo 2, Half-Life 2, Metroid Prime 2, Prince of Persia.
I just want to say that year was amazing.
All that stuff.
That was
like Metal Gear Solid 3.
Ever.
Like, it was nuts. Like, that game was sent to die. That's just how it went. But if they put the people who marketed Assassin's Creed, which is a new IP, on this game, just do the same thing.
Well, and they also you also have had 4 years now, I guess, of kind of slow burn appreciation for the game sort of building
up. Exactly. I mean, when that game came out, like, it took a few weeks, but the critical, you know, acclaim and people talking about it eventually got through. So people know it was a good game. And I think Ubisoft's biggest mistake was to not make a sequel right away, like quickly, you know, while people are still talking about it, and give it another shot. They just kind of let it, you know, slide. But I'm glad they're going back to it.
Yeah, but then you have a case like Kid Icarus, right, where people ask for it and ask for it and ask for it. It's like if you make them ask for it long enough, the anticipation is there.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have to see. I mean, if it sells, I would bet, I would be surprised. Are they actually calling it Beyond Good and Evil 2?
No. Well, we don't have
I would think
a name.
I would go with a completely new title.
Yeah,
because I think that you're gonna hamper yourself trying to get new people on board if you call it Beyond Good and Evil 2. I would call it something completely
about
different.
Jade Empire. Maybe is that we could do that. Maybe
I would call it Big Jug Explosion Adventure because that could really reach out to the mainstream. Oh no! John Madden's Big Jug Explosion Adventure. There's fucking game of the year.
Hero.
Yeah, and not to sound ungrateful. After we get Beyond Good and Evil 2, how about a proper Rayman game again? That would be nice.
You know, I also look at this as being like the Ubisoft of 3+ years ago and the Ubisoft of today are pretty different. I mean, Ubisoft today is like a well-oiled machine.
They make good games. They really do.
But they also, I mean, their marketing is entirely different. Like, they're really, really strong. And they're really at the top of their game. I mean, they've been releasing solid game after solid game. They sold 5 million copies of Assassin's Creed, a new IP. And also, next-gen gamers, like, look at 360 gamers, like, they're buying a lot of software. If you make a game that gets good reviews, and especially the way Microsoft has been really savvy about kind of partnering and co-marketing good games on their platform. Yeah.
And there's the fact that they haven't released a Splinter Cell Conviction yet. Like, that's one of their biggest franchises, and they're just sitting on it because they don't think it's good enough yet.
Yeah, so hopefully...
It's nice to see. I really like where the whole industry is at right now with sequels. I think we're putting a lot more thought into them. I was happy to see that, you know, we're not hearing any Assassin's Creed 2 talk yet, because that was something I was worried about, was that it was just going to be annualized.
Well,
it still could end up being bi-annualized, but that's a little bit... it's a little bit easier to swallow, I think.
The closest thing we've got to that so far is the new Prince of Persia, which unsurprisingly is going to use the same engine. It's going to have, you know, large open-world gameplay. So I saw that at UB Days. It was just the trailer, and the producer was talking about it. They weren't showing any gameplay. They weren't showing anything. But I mean, for starters, I think it looks gorgeous. I think the game, I mean, looks amazing. I don't know why the CGI trailer they showed off wasn't cel-shaded like the game. It didn't have the same art style, but whatever. There's really not much to talk about. You have a deadly new ally. It's a protagonist named Alika.
Alika, very much.
She's going to... She's cute. She's going to... you do, like, flips and stuff, and she does flips, and then you throw her at people and explosions, and I don't know, something like that. But
so it's like Banjo-Kazooie.
It's like Banjo-Kazooie. Just like that. Yeah, not really much else to say about it, except for the fact that, you know, they're totally changing it up. It's a whole new trilogy. I think they kind of more or less said it's going to be a trilogy. Not really. But they said it's not tied to the old trilogy, so...
We love trilogies. It'll be a trilogy.
And but it's got a whole new look, whole new prints, whole new kind of gameplay. They want every battle to feel like a boss battle. So it's going to have a totally different feel from the other games, which I think is awesome. Like, you made a trilogy. It was really awesome. Move on.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. Other stuff at UB Days. Far Cry 2 is really, really, really impressive. Like, really impressive. Graphically speaking, it's pretty amazing. The 360 version that they had running, you know, 4+ months before release, was really smooth, really polished, good frame rate. There were some bugs, like if you did one thing.
Well, it is Africa, you know, there are lots of bugs in Africa.
Lol. If you did one thing, though, it kept crashing. And so every once in a while, somebody would be like, what happened if I do this? And he's like, don't
just
do
like
that.
Just like Africa.
Oh, no, it crashed.
The African economy crashes all the time. You're just not seeing the realism of this game. You're conflating it with technical issues.
Yeah. I guess I should probably get over that. one of the things that's most notable about the whole Far Cry 2 presentation is Clint Hocking told me that it would take 25 hours to beat, and then he was like sort of backtracked and said, well, you know, that's if you're running through it. It'll take closer to 100 if you do everything. Then the producer told, I don't think, some other outlet, CVG maybe, at the Paris UB Days, and he said it would take 50 hours to beat. And so... either way, you're talking about a huge game that's going to take a lot of hours. Even though stylistically it doesn't really remind me of this at all, but definitely from a gameplay design perspective, it's a lot like Stalker. Which, if you remember, I got and I really tried to play and enjoy, except at that point I was running Vista on my closest thing I have to a gaming PC, and Vista and Stalker don't get along. Stalker and XP evidently don't get along very well either. It's still pretty buggy.
I could never get it to run for more than 10 minutes before it would crash to desktop, and I mean, I patched, I did all the things that I was supposed to do, but I never could get it working.
So, I mean, Stalker, I mean, the reviews, they all said, technically speaking, it's a nightmare, but design-wise, that it was really ambitious and really good, and so it sounded awesome. It sounded like something I really wanted to play, and I never got it to work, so they're making...
I'd love to get that on 360.
They're making a prequel on 360, Clear Sky. But I don't know why they never decided, like, hey, why don't we port this to 360, like, i.e. where gamers are playing games now, dumbasses. And I don't know. They never did. Maybe they'll talk about it. I think they're going to be at E3 with Clear Sky. But point being, open-ended, you know, huge open world, kind of non-linear FPS. The only kind of relation it has to the Far Cry IP is that it's an exotic locale. They basically said, what was Far Cry, the first game? It was the island, right? It was the idea that you were on this big island, and it was beautiful and exotic, and you'd never been there. Since that time, we've had a bunch of other games on islands. We've had Lost every week. You know, people are kind of bored of the island motif, so they made another kind of locale that most people don't go to, maybe perhaps excluding Ludwig, who lives there. But so they made it Africa. And
most boring game ever.
Stupid.
It's just like The Sims.
But it looks really impressive. I kept stopping back up into the demo room throughout the whole time I was there to watch them, showing it to different groups of journalists to see if they were doing things differently. And every once in a while you'd see groups of people doing it identical to the, you know, everybody else. And every once in a while you'd see somebody else just going off and doing something like, I'm going to go over to this area over here, even though my objective isn't telling me to go there. I'm just going to go up here and light this hut on fire. And all the guys come running out and you shoot them. And the way Clint Hocking was watching people play it, he was kind of like curious to see how the enemies behaved. I mean, they're all acting on their own. You know, when I asked him, can your AI friends get in the Jeep with you and like shoot? And he said, you know, there's no reason they couldn't. I mean, they could get in there and shoot. They're not programmed to do it. We're not going to program them to do it, but they could kind of decide to do it. It's sort of weird. But it definitely seems really cool. And the whole like 100 hours of gameplay idea is that there's just like a ton of missions. That's a Grand Theft Auto. You're going on missions and doing things to try and progress the story. And missions, some missions you don't have to do, some you have to do before you can do other missions. There's side missions. There's, side missions that you can do to get more allies or, there's, it's kind of like Fistful of Dollars or, I think it was originally, the story was originally, Dashiell Hammett, Red Harvest. But you have two different sides, and you're kind of playing both sides against each other. And the whole end goal is to take out this weapons dealer, but... I was really very impressed with it. So we'll see that this fall.
Are you done talking?
Yeah, I'm done for now. I'm done.
Okay, because I have an announcement to make.
Okay.
I need to go.
You need to go right now.
Yeah, I need to leave. I need to leave. I just can't take this inane chatter anymore.
Oh, I thought we had you for another 20
minutes. Seriously, I just need to be somewhere else. Yeah, sorry.
All right. It took us a while to get.
This podcast has got a lot worse.
Things going. Because of the phone issues and stuff.
I didn't want to just disappear, so I want to be honest with the readers and the listeners and tell them that I'm no longer going to be a part of this podcast.
Well, good. I'm glad you're going, because there's a bunch of really cool stuff that we get to talk about without you. And also, we're both going to crack beers open. So, see ya.
I'm still here. But now I'm going.
Okay,
bye.
Yeah, see you. Bye. God, can you believe that guy? The nerve.
Yeah, I'm going to need to leave pretty soon, too.
Crap. All right, well, let's hurry it up. Other UB Day stuff you can read about on the site. We previewed Hawks. We previewed N-War. So check it out. Here's a short little bit. European game mags love Metal Gear Solid 4 a lot. Like, really good reviews. And then GamePro, which is the first U.S. mag to review the game, gave it a 5 out of 5 and said, quote, "It is, without a doubt, one of the greatest games of all time." Did you read that story, Justin?
No, sir. That's an all Capcom.
Yeah, he's focused. Here's some of the other quotes from that GamePro review. "This is video game storytelling at its absolute best and represents a new high watermark for the craft, easily surpassing the superb Bioshock and the subversive GTA 4. Another good
easily?
Quote. Easily, yeah. Another quote. "It sets new standards for graphics, sound, gameplay, and storytelling, and it may be years before it's equaled, let alone surpassed." Another quote, "You will not play a better game this year, maybe even this decade." Another quote, "MGS has that effect on players, effectively blurring, if not erasing, the line that divides games and cinema. It's a remarkable achievement.
Jeez.
That's all from one review. I mean, there's other stuff. It says MGS 4 will show you the bleeding edge of video game graphics. I mean, it's pretty glowing.
Let's apply our journalism hat for a second. I'm not casting dispersions, and I'm not saying that any of this isn't true. But take some of what we know about exclusive reviews, and if I had the exclusive Metal Gear Solid 4 review, I would probably be pretty glowing in my praise.
Maybe.
Not me, but if I was a publication who liked to get exclusives and maybe didn't get so much attention nowadays.
I don't know if it's an exclusive. It was just something scanned online, so who knows? Maybe the other site, the other mags. I mean, I know EGM doesn't have a review up this month. Their issue was too early, and they said they'll have it next month. It's in their reviews section, and they write about it, and it's in the review format with different people. They just don't have a score. Kind of weird.
Yeah.
So... things I would note, something like, you will not play a better game this year, maybe even this decade. 10 years ago, people, 10 years ago we were playing PlayStations. Like PlayStation 1s.
They mean like the end of the aughts? Like, in the next, you won't play a better game this year or in 2009?
Yeah, maybe they mean like this decade, like this cluster of 10 years. But like, does this guy really think that by the year 2019 we're not gonna have played a better game? In 2019, we're gonna have jetpacks and robot wives. Doesn't he get that?
And side note, there will probably be Metal Gear Solid 5.
But by then, yeah. And also, Metal Gear Solid 5 will be real life. There actually will be gene soldiers and super spies. So yeah, that's the first real review that we've actually seen. There's also a review in PlayStation Official Magazine UK, which nobody wants to give the time of day. They gave it a perfect 10 out of 10, but everybody says, oh, of course it's the official PlayStation magazine. I don't necessarily buy that, but, you know, okay, whatever. I'll give you your skepticism. Either way, Metal Gear Solid 4, it'll probably be a good game. Big surprise.
Yeah, that's what I'm betting. You know,
big surprise. Here's a neat little story that just came out this morning. We'll just hit it really quick. Valve announced a new part of its Steam service called Steam Cloud. Steam Cloud will have, will allow you to save your save games, your key mappings, and all sorts of other awesome stuff, like games you've purchased, obviously, which are already in there, all on your Steam account, which means if I go to your house and log into my Steam account, not only do I have access to all my games, but when I load up those games, it's going to have all my saves, it's going to have all my profile and all my settings for those games, just kind of further blurring that line. And that's also going to be a part of their Steamworks service. So, you know, developers can take that stuff for free and integrate it into their games. They don't owe Valve a penny. They don't have to distribute it on Steam if they don't want to. But they can use Steam to do all this stuff. So, thanks, Valve. And by the way, Valve is crushing Microsoft when it comes to PC game services. So, it's getting embarrassing at this point. They keep announcing more and more features with more and more new cool stuff. And Microsoft hasn't talked about games for Windows in like a year. I've had an interview with Kevin Unangst, who's kind of the Games for Windows guy at Microsoft, and I just basically spent the hour saying, like, why does it stink so bad, and when are you guys going to fix it? They don't have an answer. Like, I didn't even run the interview. They had nothing to say. They aren't doing anything, as far as I can tell. Anyway, so that's the news. Let's keep it moving, since apparently everybody's got someplace to be besides me. Which is sad.
It's the big three.
Justin, take it away.
Okay. Let's just blow through these, because I don't think they require much discussion, especially since we already talked about one of them.
Yeah.
So, coming in at number three, can you give me like a little drum roll or something? I'm loving this.
You don't have it loaded up. You're loading the page, you jerk.
I hadn't touched my computer for a little bit,
Are you just pacing around your hotel
download
room?
Download now, or forever hold your points. All right, delisted Xbox Live Arcade titles.
Potentially got delisted, it. Yeah. So
yeah,
it's right. Basically a list of all the titles that may or may not fit into the criteria they're going to use, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Number two, Beyond Good and Evil 2, revealed at Ubi Day 2008.
Oh, my God, what?
Are you talking about? Yeah, I know, for real. And number one, a judge said Jack Thompson is guilty on 27 of 31 misconduct charges.
The story was actually from last week. I'm not sure where it got all the traffic
from. Yeah, I think
we
talked about it.
But, yeah, so there you go. Jack Thompson is crazy. Breaking news. Check it out. So, Brush with Fame. I don't think we're going to do a new Brush with Fame this week, but we are going to announce the winner of last week's. And he's going to win the totally awesome giant pirate ship from Pirates of the Caribbean Online. That's Robert Vosper, a.k.a. Bobby V. Now, Bobby V.
Bobby V, what's up?
I actually think less of you for entering the contest. I just want you to know that. It's a giant pirate ship. It's like, I don't know, it's like a foot tall, foot wide. It's just a big ship. What are you going to do with it? I don't know. Put it on your mantle, I guess, maybe. But either way, I'll be FedExing it off to you, and you can show all your friends, and you'll be proud. Emails.
Right.
Woo!
Let's do them.
You take the first one.
Hey, JPEG crew. I just wanted to congratulate you on an incredible 50th podcast. It was great hearing some of the more memorable moments from the past, especially the yo-yo clip. The opening song, Brilliant, I almost crashed my car when I heard my name mentioned. Thanks for the great podcast. It was the perfect segue to the weekend, and I'm looking forward to 50 more. Thanks again, Mark. P.S., I wanted to send you one of your precious MP3s, but I was traveling through the week and couldn't get one out. I'll work on one next week, though. Great. Thanks, Mark.
Having trouble getting it out, Mark? yeah. So, as you can see, we took your praise for episode 50 and promptly ignored all of it. And we're going way back to the roots, totally ghetto style. We've already lost one person on the podcast, and we're recording this with a cell phone.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, Chris.
Yeah. This comes from our good pal, Vegnagun, or Vegnagun. I never knew how to pronounce that. But he also uses the qualifier BWF, Brush with Fame. With the dawn of Blu-ray, what movies are you looking forward to purchasing when they make the jump? I want to buy Blu-ray-fangled what? Escape from L.A. In that movie, Kurt Russell kills Lizzie McGuire's dad, surfs a tsunami, plays basketball to save his life, and shoots a guy while hang gliding, just like in Far Cry 2. I added that part myself. That's from Vegnagun. What movies do you want to repurchase on Blu-ray, Justin?
Wayne's World, pretty much. Just Wayne's World 1 and 2 are just, my only ones.
Just those, yeah.
That's going to be my whole library.
I'll tell you what I already bought. I don't have a nice, fancy, big HDTV yet. So I bought it. I bought it the day they announced that Blu-ray 1, that HDDVD was giving up the ghost. And I went to the store and I bought it. I think Ludwig was here. I bought it and I haven't watched it yet. I'm saving it for when I get the TV. But I bought a Blade Runner, like the super 18 DVD mega pack. It has like all the versions of the movie. And yeah. So I love that movie. And just thinking about it on Blu-ray is getting me excited. So there's an answer to that question. Yeah, Blu-ray.
Yeah, that question's been done and answered.
Yeah, see you, question. Peace. All right, take it. Next one.
Okay, this one comes to us from Eric. He says, hey guys, listen to Shit 50 right now. Chris is voicing concerns of Nintendo being able to transfer VC / Blu-ray games to a new console based on Microsoft's inability to do it with arcade content. Why the logic is, of course, terribly flawed in its own right, it's also solidly disproven. Nintendo's track record on restricting purchase content, as well as save games, Miis, and other console settings, has been pretty solid. You could find examples on your own site. Anyway, love the show. Keep up the great work. I thought sending this as an audio email to give you guys a taste of that Philly accent you showed up actually with, but I'm being lazy as hell. I just decided typing would be easier. Listen, audiophile apologists, we don't need your pity. You don't want to do an audio file, that's fine. You don't want to be a superstar, I don't care.
Yeah, whatever.
I think there might be some misunderstanding, because if I remember this discussion properly, it was in saying that their new console,
yeah, correct,
that will follow the Wii.
Yeah. I've heard, we reported on our site, Zach had a broken Wii, he got it replaced, they transferred, awesome, great. There have been cases where it didn't work for people. Same thing with 360's DRM, right? They have a process in place that's supposed to work. You're supposed to just be able to re-download the games. It didn't work for me, it didn't work for people at X3F, you know. Again, it works for some people, and, you know, anecdotally, I could point evidence and say, look, see, obviously they're doing a good job, but they're not really. My issue with Nintendo is I don't have any control over those games that I've purchased. I don't have it on 360 either. They're adding it. But I don't trust Nintendo to simply say, okay, well, now that you've purchased a virtual copy of Zelda, when you buy your Wii 2 or your Wii 3 or whatever they call it, that we're going to somehow enable you to update those. Maybe they will do it. Hey, great. I would love that. But I just don't trust them to. I don't trust them to. You know why? Because this is like the third time I've bought Zelda. Right? I mean, I don't think Nintendo's super eager to make a system where now I own a license to play Zelda anywhere, and that they're going to enable me to replay Zelda, because I bought it once for $5 on Wii, to play it on every system in perpetuity. Right? They're going to want to keep reselling me Zelda over and over and over again. So, I don't know. Maybe you're right. I'm just saying there's no proof, there's no evidence, and it has not been solidly disproven, Eric. So,
next.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Eric. I love you.
Yeah, well, whatever. And you should have a Philly accent, because it's hysterical. Anyway, Kyle says, do you think there's any chance the new Guitar Hero drums will work with Rock Band? Let's take that one first. No.
No.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure no. If Activision saw harmonics in a bar, I think they would stab them.
Yeah.
There seems
Activision's
to be some...
Activision's no fool, and they know that the reason they're making a drum kit is so you'll buy it.
Yeah.
Not so you'll use... They know you already have a Rock Band drum kit, and they don't care.
And they also think their drum kit's better. They don't want people, you know, thinking Rock Band... You know, I guess the logic would be as long as they buy the drum kit. But No, I mean, they've already shown very clearly that they don't have any interest in making peripherals cross-platform or cross, you know, I mean that in the game sense of the term platform, but you get the idea. So yeah, pretty sure that's a big NO. I'm not sure about Rock Revolution. Maybe it does. I don't know. Next question. Do you think Guitar Hero 4 is looking better than Rock Band? Rock Band 1 or Rock Band 2? Because there's supposed to be a Rock Band 2. We don't know what it looks like yet. Do I think it's looking better? I don't really know. We don't know much about it. Visually speaking, no, I don't think it looks better. I think it still looks pretty cheesy, the way Rock Band Guitar Hero 3 did. A little better than that, but I don't know. I was pretty unimpressed with Guitar Hero 3, so I'm going to still keep my money on Rock Band for now. I don't know about DLC. Yeah. I don't know about songs. I don't know about anything.
Talking to people here about it, people seem to be a lot more willing than I am to buy a second drum kit. I don't know what it would take for me to do that, because I can't see a reality in which I'm going to drop that kind of money and have two fake drum kits in my living room. I don't see that in my reality whatsoever.
Yeah, there's two issues for me. One, hold on, itching my eye. One is I don't have room for a second drum kit or a third. You know, I live in a downtown area. Like, I don't have extra bedrooms everywhere and stuff. Number two, I don't think that Guitar Hero 3 was very good, so I'm not really interested in, you know, I'll obviously try it out, but I'm not really interested in having like another set of games. I don't play Guitar Hero 3 very much now since I have Rock Band. It's kind of like for these kinds of games, you pick one and you stick to it. So we'll see, maybe it'll be better. Also, I'm not very good at the drums on Rock Band. There's only four pads. Guitar Hero 4 has five pads and the kick pedal. And then Rock Revolution has six pads and a kick pedal, I think. So it's crazy. It's getting out of hand. This is like for your brother, because he's a mutant at the drums. He'd be like, oh, six pads? Awesome. Okay, next question. I want to buy Rock Band now that it's out in the UK, but it's expensive. I don't want to fork over the cash to later find Guitar Hero is better. Okay, so if you live in the UK, same advice I'd give Ludwig in South Africa, don't buy Rock Band. It's too expensive. You know, EA is doing something wrong if it costs that much, so don't reward them with your money. In this case, I might recommend Guitar Hero 4, because Activision's already proven that it can release games with large peripherals in foreign countries for a reasonable price. So chances are Guitar Hero 4 won't cost $1 billion, and who knows, maybe it'll be better, maybe it'll be equal. Either way, it won't be, I think it's something like the equivalent of $300+ in the UK for Rock Band. That's insane. That's twice the cost of it as here. And then he finishes up and says, I guess patience is the best option. You're right, Kyle. Why'd you email us if you know that patience is the best option? You could just wait. That was a waste of time. I'm just kidding, Kyle, you're awesome. That's it for the show.
Is it the whole show?
Yeah, hold your applause, people.
I felt like I was just starting to get warmed up.
I'm sorry. You should have done that an hour and a half ago, and we could have actually made it a good show.
Shit.
Screwed it now.
Yeah, it's messed up.
I guess I'm going to have to figure out how to edit this together and make some semblance of a decent product. And, And then...
So, hey, We're not sure when you'll see a new show up, because of, you know,
special episodes
that we want to do.
Yeah. I would say it might be a safe bet to think that there might not be a show next week and there might be two specials instead. Or we'll do a show and kind of just make it really Capcom heavy. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll talk.
Who knows? We'll figure it out. But for right now, don't worry your pretty head about it.
Okay, well, if you guys want to send an email, though, you can do that anytime, show or not, podcast@joystick.com. If you would like to, I don't know, maybe review us on iTunes, you can also do that. You just go to iTunes and you hit the review button and you type, oh, this is so awesome, 11111. You can also join our Facebook.
I'm nom in there like you're eating
it. Yeah, because we're tasty. You can also put, you can also join the JPEG Facebook group. It's fun. Basically, it's just a bunch of people. And they're talking about stuff on Facebook. So that's cool. Yep. Or you could dig the show. Links to that are also in the show. I think that's about all we've got to offer you guys. So we'll catch you who knows when. Thanks for listening.